Blog Talk Radio.
You just told it.
Nah.
I heard it.
We just had everyone.
Uh-oh, where the music at? Uh-oh, Black Power, can y'all hear me? I know y'all didn't hear that. Black Power, everybody. Thank you for calling in. Tonight, we're going to do a recap. I'm actually in the field. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to play a mix from a previous episode. And tune in and listen. We always got some good information for you. So just keep your spirits up. Keep your mind right. And keep it black. Y'all can tell when I'm in the field. Let me see what I got for you right quick. Let's see what we got going on right here, brothers and sisters. Drum roll.
Rushing a fella, that's my bro, my family, bros in jail. When it comes to money, I did concentrate. Make I tell you straight, you are not my mate. If you be commission, I be head of state. But my people then go say, I know one buy, I know one die, I know one payment. I want enjoy, I want chop life, I want buy motor, I want build house, I still want donor. Tell me, money gone, what's it gone? G-Wagon, all the Bentley, the captain, ride the whip, I know V. Die for nothing, my nigga. What's it gonna be? G-Wagon, all the Bentley, the captain, ride the whip, I know V. Die for nothing. Yeah.
This is what the white man has done to you and me. He has divided us and used us one against the other. But today, thanks to Allah, you can say thanks to God or thanks to Jesus or thanks to Jehovah, whatever you want. But as a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we have been taught to say thanks to Allah. And that's what Jesus said. Jesus called on Allah. He said, Allah, Allah, lama asabatani. I believe what's good for Jesus is good for you. If Allah was good enough for Jesus to call upon, I think he should be good enough for you to call upon. Since the so-called Negro community has shot the white man by resisting all efforts to divide us, I think that you and I should continue to shock him by staying and working together in unity. Despite religious, political, economic, or educational, or social differences, let us remember that we are not brutalized because we're Baptists. We're not brutalized because we're Methodists. We're not brutalized because we're Muslims. We're not brutalized because we're Catholic. We're brutalized because we are black people in America. Here, your mother is being raped and you're not supposed to be emotional. Your women, please, your women can't walk the street without some cracker putting his hands on her, and you're not supposed to be emotional. If you say that you're fed up, if you teach the Negro, people don't even know their own name. Why? Because he took it away from them. Please, please. 20 million black people don't even know their own language. Why? Because he took it away from them. 20 million black people who don't even know the history of their ancestors. Why? Because he took it away from them. And if you try and tell them how thoroughly and completely they've been robbed, he says you're teaching hate. That's something to think about. Today, you are coming out of college. You're coming out of the leading universities. You're trying to go in a good direction, but you don't know which direction to go in. And if somebody tries to take you right to the root of your problem, they say that that man's a hate teacher. If I ask why should the senators in Washington, and then again, if we tell you that Negroes are being hung on the tree or being shot down illegally, unjustly, and those Negroes should do something to protect themselves, you say you're advocating violence. The white man is tricking you. He's trapping you. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in South Vietnam. Please, please, please. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in Berlin. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, he didn't say get nonviolent. He said, praise the Lord, but pass the ammunition. But when someone attacks you, when someone comes at you with a club, when someone comes at you with a rope, when someone comes at you with a gun, despite the fact that you've done nothing, he tells you, suffer peacefully. Pray for those who use you despitefully. Be long-suffering. And how long can you suffer after suffering for 400 years? So I just want to clear up that little point right there, because he says that we play on your emotions. And when you turn on your television tonight, or your radio, or read the newspaper, they're going to tell you in that paper that I was playing on your emotions. Imagine you, a second-class citizen. That's not getting emotional, it's getting intelligent. And as far as your mayor is concerned, I see you should say their mayor, a man named Yorty, who has been slandering the Muslims a professional liar, a professional liar. Who has mastered the art of using half-truths. Put it in the paper that they broke into our religious place of worship and got records that they can use to prove that most of us have criminal records. You can't be a Negro in America and not have a criminal record. Martin Luther King has been to jail. Please. James Farmer has been to jail. Why, you can't name a black man in this country who is sick and tired of the hell that he's catching who hasn't been to jail. Charged him with being seditious. They put Moses in jail. They put Daniel in jail. Why, you haven't got a man of God in the Bible that wasn't put to jail when they started speaking out against exploitation and oppression. They charged Jesus with sedition. Didn't they do that? They said he was against Caesar. They said he was discriminating. Because he told his disciples, go not the way of the Gentiles, but rather go to the lost sheep. He discriminated. Don't go near the Gentiles, go to the lost sheep. Go to the oppressed. Go to the downtrodden. Go to the exploited. Go to the people who don't know who they are, who are lost from the knowledge of themselves, and who are strangers in a land that is not theirs. Go to those people. Go to the slaves. Go to the second-class citizens. Go to the ones who are suffering the brunt of Caesar's brutality. And if Jesus were here in America today, he wouldn't be going to the white man. The white man is the oppressor. He would be going to the oppressed. He would be going to the humble. He would be going to the lowly. He would be going to the rejected and the despised. He would be going to the so-called American Negro. To have once been a criminal is no disgrace. To remain a criminal is the disgrace. I formerly was a criminal. I formerly was in prison. I'm not ashamed of that. You never can use that over my head. And that he's using the wrong stick. I don't feel that stick. I went to prison because I believed in men like Sam Yorty. I went to prison because I trusted men like Sam Yorty. I went to prison following the philosophy of men like Sam Yorty. But since I've been following the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I have been reformed, and that's more, please. That's more than Sam Yorty and Chief Parker and all these other white politicians have been able to do with the inmates in the prisons of this state. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit for reforming and rehabilitating men whom they have failed to reform and rehabilitate.
Mayor Yorty
referred to some press report that Mr. Muhammad had once been found guilty of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. He failed to explain purposely that in 1934, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad refused to send his children to the white schools in Detroit, Michigan that were teaching you about little black Sambo. That's the minor that he contributed to the delinquency of. You see, this vicious, fork-tongued white man has been able to take lies and make you turn against those who want to help you and make others turn against you. This is the contributing to the delinquency of a minor that this mayor, or a man who calls himself mayor, is talking about. In the same article, he said that the Muslims are the same people who rioted in the United Nations. someone should pull his coat and let him know that at the present moment, there are $6 million worth of suits leveled against two of New York's leading newspapers for making the mistake of charging the Muslims as being involved in those United Nations riots. We were not involved. And if this fork-tongued man who calls himself your mayor had taken the time to find that out, he wouldn't be walking into the trap that he's letting his ignorance lead him into. And if he would take the time to read the Washington Post that came out the Sunday after that incident took place, the Washington Post pointed out on the front page that the Muslims had nothing to do with the UN riots. And they quoted, in saying so, the person who was at that time the commissioner of police in New York City. See, it's lies that the white man has spread about the Muslims to try and make you afraid of the Muslims, or to try and make you think that the Muslims were a criminal element, an uncouth element, and things that you would not like to be associated with. Also, they say that I'm just clearing these things up, and then we're going to get into what happened. They also say that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a draft dodger. No, he wasn't. He just refused to go to the army because he was a man of peace. He was a minister of a religion of peace. He was teaching peace. So he outright refused to go to the army. That's not draft dodging. That's intelligence. Appear before the grand jury. Because the coroner's jury is stacked against Negroes. The grand jury is stacked against Negroes. The press, the radio, the television, and the newspapers are stacked against Negroes. But please, the Los Angeles Police Department is stacked against Negroes. He is stacked against all Negroes, all except those whom he has appointed to high positions. The controlled press, the white press, inflames the white public against Negroes. The police are able to use it to paint the Negro community as a criminal element. The police are able to use the press to make the white public think that 90% or 99% of the Negroes in the Negro community are criminals. And once the white public is convinced that most of the Negro community is a criminal element, then this automatically paves the way for the police to move into the Negro community, exercising Gestapo tactics, stopping any black man who is in the, on the sidewalk, whether he is guilty or whether he is innocent, whether he is well-dressed or whether he is poorly dressed, whether he is educated or whether he is dumb, whether he's a Christian or whether he's a Muslim. As long as he is black and a member of the Negro community, the white public thinks that the white policeman is justified in going in there and trampling on that man's civil rights and on that man's human rights. Once the police have convinced the white public that the so-called Negro community is a criminal element, they can go in and question, brutalize, murder unarmed, innocent Negroes, and the white public is gullible enough to back them up. This makes the Negro community a police state. This makes the Negro neighborhood a police state. It's the most heavily patrolled. It has more police in it than any other neighborhood, yet it has more crime in it than any other neighborhood. How can you have more cops and more crime? Why? It shows you that the cops must be in cahoots with the criminals. The texture of the hair that God pleased, that God gave them, so much that they'll put lie on it? Do you realize? Now, you know, brother, lie will eat a hole in steel, and you know your head is not that hard. To hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate, you should ask who yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you. We teach you to love the hair that God gave you. Here you way out in the middle of the ocean, can't swim, and you worried about someone that's in the bathtub and can't swim. We don't steal, we don't gamble, we don't lie, and we don't cheat. And that also deprives the government of revenue. Because you can't get into a whiskey bottle without getting past the government seal. You can't open a deck of cards without getting past the government seal. Here, the white man makes the whiskey and then puts you in jail for getting drunk. He sells you the cards and the dice and puts you in jail when he catches you using them. So he's against us because we fix it where he can't catch you anymore. We take the dice out of your hands and the cards out of your hands and the whiskey out of your head. The most disrespected person in America is the black woman.
The Constitution set up by their ancestors to serve the people no longer serves the people, for the people have changed. The people of the 18th century have become the ruling circle of the 20th century, and the people of the 20th century are the descendants of the slaves and the dispossessed of the 18th century. The Constitution set up to serve the people of the 18th century now serves the ruling circle of the 20th century. And the people of today stand wanting for a foundation for their own life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. The Civil Rights Movement has not produced this foundation, and it cannot produce this foundation because of the nature of the United States society and economy. The version of the Civil Rights Movement, the vision of the Civil Rights Movement is to achieve goals which have been altered by 200 years of change. Thus, the Civil Rights Movement and similar movements have produced no foundation for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They have produced humiliating programs of welfare and unemployment compensation, programs with sufficient form to deceive the people, but with insufficient substance to change the fundamental distribution of power and resources in this country. Moreover, while the movements attempt to get minorities into the system, we note that the government continues this pattern of practice which contradicts its democratic rhetoric. We recognize now that we see history repeating itself, but on an international as well as a national scale. The relentless drive for profit led this nation to colonize, oppress, and exploit its minorities. This profit drive took this nation from democratic capitalism and underdevelopment to bureaucratic capitalism and overdevelopment. Now we see that the small ruling circle continues its profit drive by oppressing and exploiting the people of the world. Throughout the world, the proletariat is crushed so that the profits of the American industry can continue to flow. Throughout the world, the freedom struggle of oppressed people are opposed by this government because they are a threat to the bureaucratic capitalism of the United States of America. We gather here to let it be known at home and abroad that a nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness has in its maturity become an imperialistic power dedicated to death, oppression, and the pursuit of profit. We will not be deceived by so many of our fellow men. We will not be blinded by small changes in form which lack any change in substance of the imperialist expansion. Our suffering has been too long, our sacrifices have been too great, and our human dignity is too strong for us to be prudent any longer. The Black Panther Party calls for freedom and power to determine our destiny. The Black Panther Party calls for full employment for all our people. The Black Panther Party calls for an end to the capitalistic exploitation of our community. The Black Panther Party calls for decent housing for all people. The Black Panther Party calls for an educational system that will tell us the true facts about this decadent society. The Black Panther Party calls for exemption from the military service. The Black Panther Party calls for an end to police brutality. The Black Panther Party calls for freedom for all political prisoners and prisoners of war. The Black Panther Party calls for trials by members of our peer when we're brought to the court and justice. The Black Panther Party calls for a United Nations plebiscite to determine the will of black people as to their national destiny. Black people and oppressed people in general have lost faith in leaders of America, in the government of America, and the very structure of the American government, that is the Constitution, its legal foundation. This loss of faith is based upon the overwhelming evidence that this government will not live according to the Constitution because the Constitution is not designed for its people. For this reason, we assemble a constitutional convention to consider rational and positive alternatives. Alternatives which will place the emphasis on the common man. Alternatives which will bring about a new economic system in which the rewards as well as the work will be equally shared by all people. A socialist framework. Alternatives which will guarantee that within the socialist framework, all groups will be adequately represented in decision-making and administration which affect their lives. Alternatives which would guarantee that all men will obtain their full manhood rights, that they will be able to live, be free, and seek out those goals which will give them respect and dignity while permitting the same privileges for every other man regardless of his condition or status. The sacredness of man and of the human spirit requires that human dignity and integrity ought to always be respected by every other man. We will sell for nothing less, or at this point in history, anything less is but a living debt. It is a fact that we will get change. We will transform the society. It is up to the oppressor to decide whether this will be a peaceful thing or... We will use whatever means that is effective, regardless of the consequence, because it is our conclusion and our principle that a slave who dies a natural death will not balance two dead flies on the scales of eternity. We will have our manhood, even if we have to level the face of the earth. And I step again. So I would like to say that we are one tonight. Let us be one in the future. Power to all of the people.
In this crooked game of power politics here in America, the Negro, namely, the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, the political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power, but the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political football, and the white liberals control this ball through tricks or tokenism, false promises of integration and civil rights. In this game of deceiving and using the American Negro, the white liberals have complete cooperation of the Negro civil rights leader, who sell our people out for a few crumbs of token recognition, token gains, token progress. In the New York Tribune, in an editorial dated February the 5th, 1960, they pointed out that out of 11 million qualified Negro voters, only 2,700,000 actually take time to vote. This means that, roughly speaking, only 3 million out of the 11 million Negroes who are qualified to vote take an active part, and the remaining 8 million remain voluntarily inactive. And yet it is this small minority, the 3 million Negro voters, who help determine who will be the next president. If who will be the next president can be influenced by 3 million Negro voters, it is easy to see why the presidential candidates of both political parties put on such a false show with the civil rights bill and promises of integration. They must impress the 3 million voting Negroes who are the actual integration seekers. And if so much fuss is made over these 3 million integration seekers, what would the presidential candidates have to do to appease the 8 million non-voting Negroes if they ever decided to become politically active? They hold the balance of power. Who are the 8 million non-voting Negroes? What do they want? And why don't they vote? The 3 million Negro voters are the so-called middle-class Negroes or high-class Negroes or uppity Negroes, who are referred to by the late Howard University sociology professor E. Franklin Frazier as the black bourgeoisie, who have been educated to think as patriotic individualists with no racial pride whatsoever, who believe in and look forward to the future integrated, intermarried society that is constantly being promised to them by the Negro politician. And therefore, this integration-minded 3 million minority remain an active part of the white-controlled political parties. But it must never be overlooked that these 3 million Negro integration seekers are only a small minority of the 11 million qualified Negro voters. The 8 million non-voting Negroes are the majority, the downtrodden black masses. They have refused to vote. They've refused to take a part in politics because they reject the Uncle Tom approach of the clergy politician leadership
that has been handpicked for the so-called Negroes by the white man himself. This clergy politician leadership does not speak for the Negro majority. They don't speak for the black masses. They speak for the black bourgeoisie, the brainwashed, white-minded, middle-class minority, who, because they are ashamed of their race, because they are ashamed of being black and don't want to be identified with black, they are seeking to lose this black identity by mixing and mingling and intermarrying and integrating with the white society.
Haiti is a very, 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 very important island in the Pan-African struggle. Haiti brings pride to Africans who know history. In 1803, Haiti was the most democratic country in the world. It was the only country in the world that did not allow slavery on its borders. The only country in the world in 1803. Once you properly understand this history, because you know these capitalist pigs have such a way of making affairs, if we've never done anything as Africans, we don't know democracy. We don't know democracy. In 1803, Africans gave the freest world, the freest nation to the entire world. The only country in the world that did not allow slavery was Haiti. And not only did not allow it, but the only country in the world that put its natural resources towards fighting against any oppression was Haiti. Simon Bolivar, who liberated South America, anyone who knows the history knows it was Haiti that gave him the money, outfitted him with ships to start the struggle. And the Haitians demanded only one thing of Bolivar. When you free Venezuela, when you free Colombia, when you free Argentina, when you free Peru, free the slaves. The only condition of which they required of Simon Bolivar. This is history. You can't hide the truth, and if you know your history, you look for history, you will find it. You can imagine the threat that history imposed, that Haiti imposed upon America since 1803. There was nothing that American imperialism, one other thing I must tell you, from this period, 1803, Haiti fought every major European power, the Americans, the French, the Spanish, the Germans, the Portuguese, all of them, trying to bring Haiti down, and not one of them could make Haiti renege on her democratic principles. On that country, there would never be on that territory a slave. Every man, every woman was free. You just make it to Haiti, and you're free. No slavery. Everywhere else, there was slavery. Everywhere else. In the great America, they were, let's not talk about that. So anyway, you could imagine the threat that Haiti posed. American imperialism, all of its life, had only one objective, to bring those slaves back onto the plantation. There was only one objective, bring those slaves back to the plantation. And America, France, all of them could not bring Haiti back to the plantation. Even after slavery was made illegal throughout the Western Hemisphere and was even abandoned and emancipation proclamations were read everywhere, Haiti continued to be the guiding inspiration for Africans throughout the Western Hemisphere. It was not until 1915 that American imperialism could put the heels of the Marines on Haiti, install Papa Doc, a scum of our race, one who would bow down to the wishes of imperialism and rape his people without the slightest mercy. And since then, that's where Haiti has been, and that's where it is to this day. And it's certainly not Bill Clinton who's going to liberate it.
Yo, turn this motherfucking shit up!
I'm an African.
infiltrate and murder off the best of my clan. I'm not American, punk, Democrat, or Republican, remember that. Most of the cats, you know, be hustling. My mama worked all her life and still struggling. I blame it on the government and say it on the radio. What? And if you don't already know, all these Uncle Tom ass-kissing niggas got to go. Got to go, got to go, got to go.
Uh-oh, we have silence on the radio. Hold on, Brother Emmanuel. I'm about to let you in. Sorry about that, family. They called me. What? We're not on? It was just playing. We are on. They can hear me. The switchboard is tripping. Hold on, Brother Emmanuel. I'm going to let you in. What just happened to the music? All right. Hold on, Brother Emmanuel. Can you hear me? Black Power, can you hear me?
Black Power,
come on, I'm muted, man. You can't... Yeah, sorry about that, guys. I thought the clip was going to play longer than it was, so it caught me off guard. With that being said, hold on, I'm on the air, Jason. I'm over here with my family. We were taking care of a little business. I thought the clip was longer than it was, so it caught me off guard. Do you have something to say before I play this next clip? I'm on the air. You have something to say before we play the next clip? Can you hear me? Brother Emmanuel, can you hear me? Okay, I guess not, guys.
Oh, no, I thought you were talking to your family members. No, I'm going to wait until after you finish the next clip. We'll have everybody in on the night. I know
no, when I play this next clip, that's it. I'm in the field right now. When I play this clip, it ain't no coming back. I'm going to take it to the end. I actually thought the clip that I was playing was an hour and 40 minutes because the switchboard doesn't give me the mobile unit doesn't give me the full timeline. So that's why I got caught off. If it's something you want to say, now's the time. All right, brothers and sisters. I'm going to go ahead and get this next clip rolling.
There is no mystery God. Absolutely no mystery God. There is no God in the sky, and there is no devil under the ground. Heaven is not in the sky, and hell is not under the ground. Heaven and hell are conditions of the mind, states of existence, and states of being. So Jesus told us to stop looking for heaven in the sky. He said the kingdom of heaven is within you. And that we are the temples of the living God. That the living God lives in our temple, and he does not inhabit the sky, but he inhabits the higher realms of the heavens, of the realm of the secret innermost chamber of the subconscious chamber of the soul of man and woman. And this power bursts forth and emanates forth from him. Set in motion a universal order based on principle and law. All of this set in motion by a divine power and a divine force that never dies. It's constant. It just changes forms. God is in man. Can't be in any man. He's got to be in the original man. Because if God is the first and everything comes from him, then he can't wait for anything else. He brings everything else into existence. There could be no white man if there were no black man. It is biologically and genetically impossible for the recessive white man to produce the dominant yellow baby. Biologically and genetically impossible for the recessive yellow man and woman to produce the dominant brown baby. Biologically and genetically impossible for the recessive brown man and woman to produce the dominant black baby. But that black man and his woman, the father and the mother of it all, can produce black, can produce brown, can produce red, can produce yellow. And if the seed runs wild or mutates in the womb of the black woman can even produce an albino, something which is whiter than white, 180 degrees in either direction.
How many of you want to see the black family back together? Black man back with his black woman. There is no woman like the black woman, black man. No woman like the black woman. Don't you let no revolutionary fancy talk. Don't you let no religious fancy talk. No Christianity, no Judaism. Don't you let no Islam, no communism. Don't you let nothing put you with the white man's woman and you abandon your own woman. This black woman is the best. This black woman is the one. The one and only, Dr. Barashango is saying on the front row. That's that black woman. Mother of civilization. Queen of the planet Earth. Goddess of the universe. Oh, black man, we've been blessed. You leave Susie Rodenwickel alone. Give me a black goddess sister. I can't resist her. No blonde hair, blue-eyed, pale skin, buttermilk complexion, recessive, depressive, straight up but straight down, Miss 6 o'clock, no frills, no thrills, eugenoid, cuckersoid, subject to have the itch, white cave bitch, not for me. Give me the black woman. Give me the black woman. Black woman, black man, that's the precious divine gift to us. She keeps us warm in the wintertime. She keeps us cool in the summertime. And keeps us hot all year round. You brothers and sisters, I only ask one thing of you. Yes.
Man and woman, if it were not for what is called Africa today, there would be no Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, and the so-called world's religions. All of the religious leaders pray in this manner as they end. The Christian says, our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come. And he goes on, and when he ends this prayer, he says, amen. What does he say? Amen. The Hebrew, the rabbi, when he prays, hallelujah, kadima, kadima, ya'um milah, when he finishes, he says, amin. What does he say? Amin. The Islamic Imam says, Bismillah Rahman Rahim, Alhamdulillah, Rahman Rahim. And he goes on and he goes on. And when he finishes his dua, his salat, some point of the dua, somewhere along the way, he says, I mean, he says what? I mean who? I mean Ra. Amen Ra. All of the world's major religious leaders and those who stand in front of the people to lead them in the prayer service, all of them end in Amen, in the name of the great God of our ancestors. Amen. Amen. Ra. The hidden one. The hidden one. the prime moving, creative, regenerative.
We will close out with just a few statements. And one of those statements is made by Dr. George G.M. James, who wrote the book in 1954, Stolen Legacy, to whom we owe so much in the field of scholarship. And he said that the main purpose of all knowledge in the ancient world, on page 27 he stated that, was for us to become godlike. The object of all knowledge and of all learning and all material wealth was for us to, as President Imari Obadeli says in the book, Foundations of a Black Nation, he says that we somehow have to get to free the land, not just for political power, but to get back to the place where we can pursue the knowledge again, where we can solve the mystery of life and death. We probably would have solved the mystery of life and death had our high culture civilization not been interrupted by these restless people who were unhappy with themselves, therefore unhappy with the rest of the world. No one knows how far we would have went in our pursuit of knowledge. After all, we were living to be an average of 120. How far could we have taken it? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said we could have lived at least 1,000 years before even thinking about death. Just think on that. So not only do you have to free the land and help to liberate the rest of the planet Earth for political power again, you have to do it so that all humanity can once again get back on its proper course and we can live life as it's supposed to be lived, become more godlike. The object of this knowledge is to be a reflection of yourself in the mirror of history. And when you look in that mirror, you will see God, because each one of us are in the image of the Creator, the Ancient of Days with the lamb woolly hair and the color of amber. And as Jeremiah said, he looked like the picture of it. Each one of us are a reflection. So when we look in the mirror, we see God. God shining forth from us. And if you truly believe in the Creator, then you know that you cannot accept a life other than the highest and the best that you can get out of it. That you are called by the mandate of God to put your faith to work and take a mountain and move it into the sea if you have to.
power politics here in America, the Negro, namely the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, the political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power, but the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political football, and the white liberals control this ball through tricks or tokenism, false promises of integration and civil rights. In this game of deceiving and using the American Negro, the white liberals have complete cooperation of the Negro civil rights leader, who sell our people out for a few crumbs of token recognition, token gains, token progress. In the New York Tribune, in an editorial dated February the 5th, 1960, they pointed out that out of 11 million qualified Negro voters, only 2,700,000 actually take time to vote. This means that, roughly speaking, only 3 million out of the 11 million Negroes who are qualified to vote take an active part. And the remaining 8 million remain voluntarily inactive. And yet it is this small minority, the 3 million Negro voters, who help determine who will be the next president. If who will be the next president can be influenced by 3 million Negro voters, it is easy to see why the presidential candidates of both political parties put on such a false show with the Civil Rights Bill and promises of integration. They must impress the 3 million voting Negroes who are the actual integration seekers. And if so much fuss is made over these 3 million integration seekers, what would the presidential candidates have to do to appease the 8 million non-voting Negroes if they ever decided to become politically active? They hold the balance of power. Who are the 8 million non-voting Negroes? What do they want? And why don't they vote? The 3 million Negro voters are the so-called middle-class Negroes, or high-class Negroes, or uppity Negroes, who are referred to by the late Howard University sociology professor E. Franklin Frazier as the black bourgeoisie, who have been educated to think as patriotic individualists with no racial pride whatsoever, who believe in and look forward to the future integrated, intermarried society that is constantly being promised to them by the Negro politician. And therefore, this integration-minded 3 million minority remain an active part of the white-controlled political parties. But it must never be overlooked that these 3 million Negro integration seekers are only a small minority of the 11 million qualified Negro voters. The 8 million non-voting Negroes are the majority, the downtrodden black masses. They have refused to vote. They've refused to take a part in politics. because they reject the Uncle Tom approach of the clergy politician leadership that has been handpicked for the so-called Negroes by the white man himself. This clergy politician leadership does not speak for the Negro majority. They don't speak for the black masses. They speak for the black bourgeoisie, the brainwashed, white-minded, middle-class minority, who, because they are ashamed of their race, because they are ashamed of being black, and don't want to be identified with black, they are seeking to lose this black identity by mixing and mingling and intermarrying and integrating with the white society. The race problem cannot be solved by listening to the white-minded, brainwashed minority.
It is a crimogenic society, a criminal society, and a society that practices white-on-black violence, because it is a society founded on the kidnapping of African people, the manslaughter of African people in the mid-passage, the extortion from African people of their labor, and the enslavement of African people. Therefore, the very nature and foundations of this society rest on two massive genocidal crimes, and this original crime is a part of its nature today. It is a crimogenic society because this group of people cannot face their own criminality. They must engage in the psychology of denial and repression and distortion. And this denial and distortion and repression must suffuse throughout the total society, throughout its total institutions, throughout its total values, and therefore ultimately it must pervert its total population. It is a criminal society and a white-on-black violent society because it engages in the crime of breach of contract. It has breached the contract of its constitution. It breached the contracts it made with African people during the reconstructions. It breached its contracts of the 14th, 15th, and other amendments. It breached its contracts in reversing its rulings in the 1860s, 1870s, 1980s, and 1990s. It breached its contracts in terms of sharecropping, the peonage of our people, going back on the 40 acres and a mule, and all the rest of the things. It is a criminal society because it constantly engages in the assault and battery against its black populations. It engaged in historical lynching, and behind the walls, as my brother mentioned here, of prisons, it still now engages in legal lynchings of African people. It engages in Klan terrorism, which it is still engaged in today. It engages in race riots, where it destroys the African people. It engages in police riots, and it engages in police brutality, where over 300 or more of our young men and women have been destroyed in the city of New York alone. It is a criminal society, and it is a crimogenic society, and a society that engages in white-on-black violence because it is indicted on the charges of official malfeasance when it revokes its mandate in terms of giving justice to its people and makes its justice system an instrument of injustice, when its so-called rehabilitative system is a school for criminality. It engages in official malfeasance when it rigs its juries, when it legally lynches the ones it so woefully sentences. It engages in official malfeasance when it engages in gerrymandering of black districts, when it betrays the mandates of black voters, when it builds, as my brother mentioned here, prisons as industries so that the incarceration of black men becomes a profit-making industry and a means by which the ruling class makes war against the subordinate classes. It engages in criminal activity, and it is a criminal society.
And she, Mali, is particularly important to us because this is, Mali has three ancient cities. You have a city called Gao, G-A-O. You have a city called Jene on the course of the Niger River. And one of the most important things as we study Africa is the river systems. If you understand Africa's rivers, you can understand African history. If you understand not just the history of the Nile, but the Niger, the Congo River, the Limpopo, the Zambezi, you will have the Orange River. You can have a good history of Africa. But the most important of those cities is called Timbuktu. And most of us have heard of Timbuktu. Mali is a large country. It has these three great cities. And, of course, this is an image of a black woman from Mali in northwest Africa. So we've gone from southern Africa to northwest Africa. This image takes us to the Horn of Africa, a place called Djibouti. The Horn of Africa incorporates Eritrea, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Djibouti. Some people might also include Kenya in that category. So we've gone from south to west to east. This image takes us back northwest, and this is an image of African children in Morocco. And here's one of my favorites, fair-skinned daughters of Africa from the country called Senegal. Senegal also has a very rich history, and many of us probably came, or there's a likelihood that many of us came from there, or perhaps we came from Guinea or Ghana or Nigeria, all in that region in West Africa. Now, what I'd like to do now is to move directly from Africa itself and begin to examine the African presence around the world. For example, this image right here takes us to Syria. And this image is in Western Asia. And we're moving into a part of Asia that we sometimes call the Middle East, although some of my Hebrew Israelite friends tend to call it Northeast Africa. This one is an image of a Syrian nobleman. This image is about 2,000 years old. This is in the National Museum, literally sitting on the floor in a corner in the National Museum in Damascus, Syria. And this image here takes us a bit farther, actually a little farther south than Syria. These are Jews. Actually, these are captured prisoners of war. Judeans, this takes us to about 800 B.C., and this image is in Israel. Actually, this is a series of bas-reliefs, stone carvings, and this is in the British Museum, the National Museum, the prestigious National Museum of the U.K., or certainly England, and this one is Jewish prisoners of war. This image is of Ishmael. Ishmael is a traditional ancestor of the Arabs. And Ishmael, as you can see here, is portrayed as Africoid, or African if you like. He is the son of Ibrahim and an African woman, or Abraham if you like, and an African woman named Hagar, sister, a black woman from Egypt. And they are regarded, certainly Ishmael is regarded, as the traditional ancestors of the Arabs. They laid the basis, he and his father Ibrahim, or Abraham, considered a prophet in Islam, laid the basis for the Kaaba sanctuary at Mecca. And in another presentation on the African presence in Asia, we will go into that in some detail. Here you have images of African people, black people, the original men and women, of Western Asia. This, for example, is a sheikh from Saudi Arabia. Here you have a beautiful image. This is one of my favorite slides. Unfortunately, I did not take this one. I can't claim credit for it, although I hope to visit the country that she's in. This is a black woman from Yemen in the southwest portion of the Arabian Peninsula. Yemen is closer to Africa than any other part of that region. In fact, it's just across the Red Sea, the Bab el-Mandeb, from Somalia in Eritrea in Asia itself. And this region is particularly important because in ancient times, it was where the world's, we think, finest frankincense and myrrh came from. Frankincense and myrrh were very important in ancient times. They were used as a base for cosmetics, as an antidote to poisons. They were used in the mummification process. It is said that the Roman Emperor Nero used 50 tons of incense in a cremation ceremony. We know the story of the Christ child who was brought gifts of frankincense, gold, and myrrh. Frankincense and myrrh being incense brought to the Christ child in the manger in Bethlehem. At any rate, this made Yemen very wealthy, and it was also the domain of the Queen of Sheba, one of the most interesting and important personalities in ancient times. And then we move here to Oman, and this is a new, relatively new slide for me, a new image for me. Oman is at the base of the Persian Gulf. I think that it's bounded by the Indian Ocean on the south and then the Persian Gulf on the east. And this is a large, largely desert country. The capital is called Muscat, and this is a black man in Oman. I became interested in Oman about 25 years ago when I found out that African people were still being bought and sold as chattel slaves. This image takes us to Kuwait, and this is the former Crown Prince of Kuwait. For a while, he was the emir, only for about 2 weeks of Kuwait. He is a black man. He's a member of the Al Saba family in Kuwait. I don't know if he sees himself as black or African or Arab. Certainly, he probably personifies all of those things, as well as being a Muslim by religion and way of life. This image, of course, takes us to Palestine, the Palestinian territories. This is a sister, a black woman from Palestine. She is also a former law student at Howard University. And since we're dealing with the Palestinian territories, we might as well have at least one image of a black woman in Israel itself. Now, you have different black populations, different African populations in Israel. Some of them are quite recent. They come there as a result of the airlift from Ethiopia, taking the Beta Israel, also known as Falasha, out of Ethiopia into Israel. But you have other black populations that are probably the original people there. We know that the first culture of Palestine, Israel, is called the Shukbah culture, S-H-U-K-B-A-H. This culture is at least 10,000 years old. We've examined the skeletal remains. They are clearly Africoid. So you have a very, very ancient African presence, too. And certainly in this region, you have populations like the Canaanites. You have the Phoenicians that have a black base. And then we go a little further east, and we look at the African presence in Iraq. Africans have been in Iraq for a very long time. You have an African civilization in Iraq called the Sumerian civilization. And then you also have Africans, again, who are captured in Africa, enslaved, and brought to that part of the world. They are particularly prominent in the southern part of Iraq near the city of Basra. And even now, I would say that the black or African population in Iraq is about 10 to 15% of the total population. Now, I call these black men and women, these Africans, the invisible people, because we seldom see them in the news. We seldom see them on TV. We seldom see them in the print media. But we have the evidence of anthropology and archaeology. You have eyewitness accounts, which means you have historical accounts. So we mesh these things together, these various scientific disciplines, in order to reconstruct the history of African people. Because the reconstruction of the history of African people is essentially the reconstruction of the missing pages in world history. We are trying to look at the role of people of color in general in history. We're specifically looking at the role of African people, who I think are the most maligned, the most neglected people in human history. But we're also looking at the role of women, so that it's not just his story. Women have also, in many ways, been written out of the history books. And we are trying to reconstruct a history that is not as Napoleon Bonaparte, the racist emperor in France, 200 years ago, was wont to call it, a fable agreed upon. Now, this image takes us to South Asia. We're moving rapidly. We move from Africa itself into the Middle East, Northeast Africa, Southwest Asia, depending on the nomenclature that you choose to use. I designate the area Southwest Asia for the most part. And now we're in South Asia proper. South Asia incorporates Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and if you wanted to incorporate it, you could say Myanmar or Burma. And this is a Aboriginal woman from East India. She is from a group called the Banda, a very small group. In 1999, actually 98 as well, but 99 in particular, I attempted, I went to East India, a state called Orissa, And I tried to visit these people, but they are in a very isolated, desolate area. The French did some good anthropological work with these sisters and brothers in the late 1950s, and they have become very, very familiar to many African Americans because they look like Africans on the continent of Africa. Some people I've even argued with, some people, for example, have told me that they are from Gabon. But most people would think that they are from Kenya or Tanzania. They are from the area near Lake Turkana or perhaps even Maasai. A lot of that has to do with the bangles around this woman's neck, but I assure you that they are actually from East India. East India is very important to us from an African perspective, from an anthropological perspective, because India has the largest concentration of black people in any single country in the world. India has approximately 300 million people of African descent. And in the course of this presentation, of course, I'm using the words African and black as synonyms interchangeably. Let's look at a few more. This is an image, a photograph that I took in what's called a Basti, B-A-S-T-I. This is a black community outside on the outskirts of the city of Bhubaneswar in East India in the state of Orissa. If you want to know your geography, Orissa is going near the East Indian state of Bengal, also near the East Indian state of Assam and Sikkim as well. And again, this is what the original people look like. These are the first people of India. Humanity is born in Africa, and those Africans begin to filter out of Africa, I think, maybe 150,000 years ago, perhaps earlier than that. And again, we know a lot of that based on studies of DNA. We know that the populations of Asia have African DNA, and they filtered into India, and they were the first people there. Before the first civilization was built, you have these black folk. Now, this image is Renoka Rashidi in the middle. I get in most of my slide presentations, why should this be an exception? And here I am, the anthropologist. This image takes us to southwest India in the state of Kerala outside the city of Cochin. This is deep in the rainforest. We had to drive the better part of a day to get there, myself, my guide, three translators, and a security person to drive into the rainforest, into the jungle.
Here we are. Here we are. Yeah. This one right here is for the people.
That's dumbest, carry the language of Egyptian mummies on a flag or a moon, and can't find food for the starving dummies. Pay no mind to the youth, cause it's not like the future depends on it. But still the animals in the zoo, cause the chimpanzee them a make big money. This is how the media villages on TV the picture is. Savages and villages, and the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids, stereotyping the image of the images, and this is what the image is. You buy a car, keep on stand, all of a sudden you are still in Indiana Jones. And I took all the gold and took all the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzis I've ever seen and I've ever known. Put the words on this place so the world can see and it's all that we'll ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like it'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast, but the way them a go flee when the monster is fully grown. Solomon decline is where them two can defeat and them could have never clown. A spiritual DNA that prints in my soul and I will forever own, Lord.
Yeah. Sabali, it's patience. What the old folks told me.
If it's the correct black power, brothers and sisters, black power, black power.
Let us open our meeting up in prayer. Attention prayer.
Black power, brothers and sisters, we are getting ready to complete the final hour of the Friday night recap. As I said, I'm in the field. We're playing clips throughout the night. And we want to remind you, brothers and sisters, we're going to have a very special broadcast this Sunday. We will be doing a rebroadcast of a reparations conference that the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America is having, and I will be one of the presenters. So we will replay that event. But on tomorrow night, we will have Sister Fatima within Cobra out of New Orleans coming on to talk about the reparations teaching and all the great things that we, excuse me, and all the great things that we will be expected to hear from this weekend on this Sunday. So indeed, this weekend will be a reparations weekend. Black power.
And astronomy goes back to African people's genius thousands of years ago. Our ancestors, from their empirical observation of the universe, we mapped out the stars. We were not just standing around. Europeans, when are you going to come and teach us about astronomy? Asians, when are you going to come teach us about astrology? This was already known by African people thousands of years ago. Our ancestors called it the early African cosmic clock, where Neter stayed in each constellation for 2,155 years, making up what is known as the great year of 26,000 years. That means we had to observe it at least twice, brothers and sisters, over 50,000 years ago. Somebody knows something about an African ancestral genius thousands of years ago that they don't want you to know about yourself. They're still trying to write out Africa. For instance, Wallace Budge, the wisdom of the Egyptians, or Kemetic Africans, astronomy. Until the Egyptians came under the influence of Asiatics, okay, nations and the Greeks, their notion of astronomy were very limited, and their stargazers were unable to define the length of the year correctly. Here our ancestors had the three seasons in 4 months apiece, like Eket, Pert, and Shamu. They gave us the earliest calendar. This is long before the Greeks. Let's go to Herodotus, that Robert Babal even talks about, 485 to 425 B.C. It is in Heliopolis that the most learned of the Egyptians or Kemetic Africans are to be found. All agree in saying that Egyptians, by their study of astronomy, discovered the solar year and were the first to divide it into 12 parts. And in my opinion, their method of calculation is better than the Greeks. The name of nearly all the gods came to Greece from Kemet. So this is Herodotus, a Greek saying that they got this astronomy from the Kemetic Africans. Black spark, white fire, Dion Christonomos points out in 38 AD, also point out the Egyptian priests mocked the Greeks because on many things they have never known the truth. What seems to be clear is that the Egyptian priests were regarded by the Greeks as the keepers of great astronomical wisdom. In the days of the 4th dynasty, the primitive Greeks would have appeared as barbarians and other Europeans as no more than cavemen by the sophisticated and technologically advanced Egyptians who built the pyramids. So here, that's why brothers still want to be a Greek, brand themselves, because we think that's the beginning. Now, recently, this European named Robert Wuval recently wrote his book. He gave a lot of credit to Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, peace be upon him. But although he didn't acknowledge some of the other warrior scholars like Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark, he's giving a black genesis, a prehistoric origin of ancient Egypt. But brothers and sisters, let's understand that although he speaks of Neptuplia, the southwestern part of Egypt, he says this is the origin of black Egypt. That's the front room of the house. That's not the whole house, brothers and sisters. So even though Robert Wuval and some of us are talking about Robert Wuval's Neptuplia, but the point is it goes much further back than that. He's talking about these astronomical stones right here in the south part of Egypt, with ceremonial stones where our ancestors connected to celestial, and terrestrial events. From that spiritual connection, our ancestors knew this from the dawn of time. Let's go back to Ethiopia. We're deep in the house now. We're not in the front room. This is the mother of Egypt.
Of that region, in fact, is just across the Red Sea, the Bab el-Mandeb from Somalia in Eritrea in Asia itself. And this region is particularly important because in ancient times, it was where the world's, we think, finest frankincense and myrrh came from. Frankincense and myrrh were very important in ancient times. They were used as a base for cosmetics, as an antidote to poisons. They were used in the mummification process. It is said that the Roman Emperor Nero used 50 tons of incense in a cremation ceremony. We know the story of the Christ child who was brought gifts of frankincense, gold, and myrrh. Frankincense and myrrh being incense brought to the Christ child in the manger in Bethlehem. At any rate, this made Yemen very wealthy, and it was also the domain of the Queen of Sheba, one of the most interesting and important personalities in ancient times. And then we move here to Oman, and this is a new, relatively new slide for me, a new image for me. Oman is at the base of the Persian Gulf. I think that it's bounded by the Indian Ocean on the south and then the Persian Gulf on the east. And this is a large, largely desert country. The capital is called Muscat, and this is a black man in Oman. I became interested in Oman about 25 years ago when I found out that African people were still being bought and sold as chattel slaves. This image takes us to Kuwait, and this is the former Crown Prince of Kuwait. For a while, he was the emir, only for about 2 weeks of Kuwait. He is a black man. He's a member of the Al Sabah family in Kuwait. I don't know if he sees himself as black or African or Arab. Certainly, he probably personifies all of those things, as well as being a Muslim by religion and way of life. This image, of course, takes us to Palestine, the Palestinian territories. This is a sister, a black woman from Palestine. She is also a former law student at Howard University. And since we're dealing with the Palestinian territories, we might as well have at least one image of a black woman in Israel itself. Now, you have different black populations, different African populations in Israel. Some of them are quite recent. They come there as a result of the airlift from Ethiopia, taking the Beta Israel, also known as Falasha, out of Ethiopia into Israel. But you have other black populations that are probably the original people there. We know that the first culture of Palestine, Israel, is called the Shukbah culture, S-H-U-K-B-A-H. This culture is at least 10,000 years old. We've examined the skeletal remains. They are clearly Africoid. So you have a very, very ancient African presence, too. And certainly in this region, you have populations like the Canaanites. You have the Phoenicians that have a black base. And then we go a little further east, and we look at the African presence in Iraq. Africans have been in Iraq for a very long time. You have an African civilization in Iraq called the Sumerian civilization. And then you also have Africans, again, who are captured in Africa, enslaved, and brought to that part of the world. They are particularly prominent in the southern part of Iraq near the city of Basra. And even now, I would say that the black or African population in Iraq is about 10 to 15% of the total population. Now, I call these black men and women, these Africans, the invisible people, because we seldom see them in the news, we seldom see them on TV, we seldom see them in the print media. But we have the evidence of anthropology and archaeology. You have eyewitness accounts, which means you have historical accounts. So we mesh these things together, these various findings.
After the colonizers had been running around our continent of Africa, they wondered how they were going to defeat these people. You see, you got to understand, before the Greek civilization, before the Roman Empire, there was Africa. The pyramids were built 2,500 years before the Greek civilization. Have you ever wondered why the Greek philosophers, the mathematicians, where were they sent for training, for education, for retraining? They were sent to Africa. Why were they sent to Africa? Because civilization as we know it began in Africa. Civilization was in Africa before they had it in Europe. You see, the history books choose to begin history from here going forward. What they don't tell you is that even the English language is based on the Yoruba language. Humanity, as we know it, began in Africa. Without the African, there would not be any other races. It's just a simple fact.
When I am dead, wrap the mantle of the red, the black and the green around me, for in the new life I shall rise up with God's grace and blessing to lead the millions up the heights and the triumph that you well know. Look for me in a world when there are a storm. Look for me all around you, for with God's grace, I shall come back with countless millions of black men and women who have died in America, those who have died in the West Indies, and those who have died in Africa, to aid you in the fight for liberty, freedom, and life. Any leadership that teaches you to depend upon another race is a leadership that will enslave you. Any leadership that teaches you to depend upon another race is a leadership that will enslave you. They gave leadership to our foreparents, and that leadership made them slaves. But we have decided to find a leadership of our own to make ourselves free men. Our great scholars have been passed through the colleges, the universities have thrown away the blessed record.
Malcolm Garvey Huey.
Malcolm Garvey Huey.
I die, I organize. Everything I do's revolutionize. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like these really think you should. I study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Marshall Cody with the Uzi. Listening to Fela Kuti. I'm a goon with the machete. Especially if it's jelly, got the Santos for the Hexy to protect me, so respect me. This is heavy, legendary, revolutionary. My wifey, she resurrect me when they thought they had me buried. Took me out the cemetery, now it's family over every. Cause that's all that's necessary to avoid the commissary. I'ma live for you five, so I stop getting high. If you know, then you recognize. It's that black and brown pride, it's the power of the mind. RBG, God divine, you can see through the lies if you can read between the lines. I live, I die. I organize everything I do, revolutionize. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like these really think you should.
Malcolm Garvey Huey, Bungie, Bobby, Pac, and Tukey. Sitting by the door so you can say I'm acting spooky. Just like in the movie, son, you better pack your toolie. Niggas switch, be acting fruity, you'll be cracking like they pooky. Rather smoke a doobie than be burning and eluding. Bang, bang, pig shooting, we should blame Rudy Julie. Danny for the camera, shine a white and nose candy. Let you banging on the system, you a gangster wearing panties. RBG, my family, from the Bronx to Miami. Police cannot stand me, Pacquiao like a Manny. Call me little Bobby Hutton, cause I'm first to push the button. Rappers don't be saying nothing to the system, we say fuck them. This is for Nahanda, Mama C, Mama Akua. All the real OGs, I'm a soldier, cause you told me study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, young reporting in the duty.
Sticky icky, yours truly here for duty. Don DeVino, M.A. Uno, you know how we drop the jury. This is real, not a movie, not Mickey, Donald, Goofy. I'm a soldier, I avoid a bitch nigga like the cootie.
School face in a hoodie.
Fresh pair of khakis, we could do this like we fam. I go to war like the Apache for whatever. I stay ready, I learned that in Tallahassee. Baba Toon, they used to school me as a juvie. Skipping classes, never let the system use me. My duty is my passes. Watch the homies in your army, they don't always show their badges. Keep your family living healthy, teach your children about their blackness. Teach your wifey how to use the ratchet. This shit is classic. Get your food, clothes, and shelter. Fuck the system, pimp it backwards. I ain't hating, I'm just saying. If you wanna be a rapper, study
Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
A tactical approach is designed.
The organization constitutes an attempt to replace the old system of colonial exploitation by a new system of collective colonialism, which will be stronger and more dangerous than the old evils we are striving to liquidate from our continent. This is another reason why we should come together in a unified African economic plan, which, operating on a continental scale, can make a solid attack on the imperialist domination in Africa. We should, without delay, aim at the creation of a joint African military command. There is little wisdom in our present separate effort to build up and maintain defense forces, which, in any case, would be ineffective in a major world conflict. If we examine this problem realistically, we would ask, which single African state could protect itself against an imperialist aggressor. And how much more difficult this would be when some states are allowing the imperialists to maintain bases on their territories. I have already referred to the military forces with South Africa, its reason, and the danger it poses for the new African state and the struggle of those still in chains. Only our unity can provide us with anything like adequate protection. Those problems can best be met within a unified Africa, and it should be possible in the higher reaches of our endeavor to devise a constitutional structure which will secure the objectives I have outlined, and yet preserve the sovereignty of each of the countries joining the Union. Countries within the Union will naturally maintain their own constitutions, continue to use their own national emblems and national anthems and other symbols and paraphernalia of sovereignty. Regional associations and territorial groupings can only be other forms of balkanization unless they are conceived within the framework of a continental union. There are existing models which we can modify or adapt to our pattern. The United States of America, the Soviet Union, India and China have proved the efficacy of unions embracing large stretches of land and population. Long live African freedom fighters. Long live African independence. Long live your struggle. And long live African unity.
Understanding the very origin and the nature and the coding of the white man, and understanding that his very existence and world control and domination and the maintaining of white supremacy is based on the murder of the black man and woman, then it is no wonder that police brutality is to the level that it is in black communities all over America. The cold-blooded murder of Brother Aswan there in Brooklyn just a few weeks, months ago, shot 20 times, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26 times. Brother Jerry Lee Amy in Los Angeles shot 39 times, over 6 feet tall, shot even on his shoulders, which meant, did the cracker get on a stepladder and shoot him on his shoulders? Or did they shoot him and shoot him and shoot him down to the ground and keep shooting him even after he was on the ground? You don't have to shoot a damn elephant 39 times to kill an elephant. And Jerry Lee Amy, as always, as all of us are, was the wrong man. Cracker was looking for a robbery suspect. Jerry Lee Amy is playing with his daughter in the front yard, and as they are running across the front yard, the cracker assumes that he is a so-called fugitive of just us, and so they shoot him down on his lawn in front of his baby girl. Brother Philip Pinnell would still be alive in New Jersey. Brother Lewis there in St. Petersburg, Florida, would still be alive as the crackers rolled up on him and claimed that his car lunged forward, that one was on the side and the other one, what kind of fool this is, I don't know. The other cop was supposedly in front of the car looking through the front of the windshield. Common sense would tell a damn fool, you don't have to be a policeman, that you don't stand in front of the vehicle. But they claimed the vehicle lunged forward. They shot him. The policeman was never hit by the vehicle. The vehicle never crashed anywhere into the pole or anywhere on the side. Brother Lewis would still be alive if we understood this dynamic better than we understand it. Our brother in Johnny Gamage in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who was there in the suburbs of Pittsburgh. And the crackers said that he stepped on his brakes and his brake lights came on too many times. His brake lights were blinking too many times. And so they snatched him from the vehicle, and all of them jumped on top of him and beat him and choked him and choked him until they choked in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Brother Johnny Gamage to death. Sister Eula May Love and the many that are from the New York area, from the New Jersey area, from Chicago, from Los Angeles, from the South, and throughout. All of them, brothers and sisters, victims of police brutality, and we don't even have the time to name all of us killed at the hands of brute beast police. It was former Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall who spoke at Howard Jew University, sometimes called Howard University. And as he spoke there, he said that the Ku Klux Klan, that the white paramilitary right-wing organizations, the Nazis and others, that the Klan no longer just wears white hoods and white sheets, but now the Klan wears blue uniforms, carries a badge or a shield and a legal, quote-unquote, weapon, that the Klan now wears black robes and sits on the judge's bench to rule from the courtroom. And so Thurgood Marshall, having been a Supreme Court justice, too afraid to make bold stands himself, but in a sense like the spook who sat by the door, on his way out, he could begin to give up a little bit of the truth. And right here in New York, we have Judge Bruce Wright. And as we read his book, Black Robes, White Justice, in Black Robes, White Justice, Judge Bruce Wright gives us the inside track on the criminal justice system of the white man. And never call it a criminal justice system unless you put the adjective in front of it, that it is a criminal justice system. In fact, it is the criminal justice system. It is no wonder that there is police brutality, because the white man is a criminal. He's the number one criminal on the face of the planet Earth. Criminals established the criminal justice system.
All my life I had to fight, nigga. All my life I, hard times like, yeah. Bad trips like, yeah. Nazareth, I'm fucked up, homie, you fucked up. But if God got us, then we gon' be alright.
Nigga, we gon' be alright. Nigga, we gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? We gon' be alright. Nigga, we gon' be alright. Huh? We gon' be alright. Nigga, we gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? We gon' be alright.
And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. One Mac 11, even boom with the face down. Skimming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in the twilight. With pretty pussy and Benjamin is the highlight. I tell my mama I love her, but this what I like, Lord knows. 20 of them in my Chevy, tell them all to come and get me. Reaping everything I sow, so my karma come in heaven. No preliminary hearings on my record. I'm a motherfucking gangster in silence for the record. Tell the world I know it's too late. Boys and girls, I think I've gone crazy. Trying to side my vices all day. Won't you please believe when I say, when you know we've been hurt, been down before. Nigga, when our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? Nigga, and we hate po-po. Wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. Nigga, I'm at the preacher's door. My knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gon' be alright.
Nigga, we gon' be alright. Nigga, we gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? Alright, nigga, we gon' be alright. Huh? We gon' be alright. Nigga, we gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? We gon' be alright.
What you want? You a house, you a car, 40 acres and a mule, a piano, a guitar, anything. See, my name is Lucy, I'm your dog. Motherfucker, you can live at the mall. I can see the evil, I can tell it. I know it's illegal, I don't think about it. I deposit every other zero, thinking of my partner. Put the candy, painting on a Rico, digging in my pocket. In a profit, big enough to feed you. Every day my logic, get another dollar just to keep you in the presence of your Chico. talk about it, be about it. Every day a sequel. If I got it, then you know you got it. Heaven, I can reach you. Pet dog, pet dog, pet dog, my dog, that's all. Pit back and chat, I strap the back for y'all. I rap, I black on tracks, so rest assured. My rights, my wrongs, I write till I'm right with God. When you know, we've been hurt, been down before. Nigga, when our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? Nigga, and we hate po-po, wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. Nigga, I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gon' be alright.
Nigga, we gon' be alright. Nigga, we gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? We gon' be alright. Nigga, we gon' be alright.
Giving honor to those who came in the great line of divine, those who came before us, those who came after us, and those, most importantly, that are here now.
Whoa! Black power, Brother Emmanuel. Right on time. Right on time, Brother Emmanuel. Go ahead, brother. You got it.
We thank everybody for tuning in tonight. As we always begin our things, giving honor to those in the great line of divine, we ask in the name of our Father, our Creator, that divine will of understanding is yours for tonight's message. We thank our general for bringing the food that edifies our body and our soul. And we thank the many brothers and sisters all around this planet that represents the true essence of the Black Panther, the vanguards of the people. And here another night, you got the truth as that is defined as love. For the book says, if you love me, Peter, feed my flock. Understanding that means if you care about me, give me the same thing that you would put in your body to make your body continue to be that which your Creator made it to be, strong, balanced, disciplined. Before this show ends, I want my brothers and sisters to be reminded of a situation that happened in the pages of history, and many of you have heard about it. Some of you who have just joined the planet existence, you might not have heard about it because we know the enemy is trying their best to keep the history away from us. But as our General Khalid Abdul Muhammad, who you heard many marks of intelligence tonight from, giving you the roadmap to liberation and salvation, tells you that history is our best reward, our research. For if a man knows what happened yesterday, he will know what will happen tomorrow, and he will be better at understanding and taking charge of today, which is the only thing all of us have. And in this land, history has been clouded. But there were two things that happened in this history. There were two towns. I want you to look them up. And they were called Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, the situation that brings these two to our attention tonight is that there were two bombs dropped on these cities. And those two bombs dropped on those cities were dropped by the American government, the North American government in which you reside right now, if you're hearing from these shores. And when they dropped these bombs, the president that was over the country at that time was a man named Harry Truman. And Truman wrote a book, and he said the day before he commissioned for those bombs to be dropped on those cities, he went to church and he prayed. And I would ask my brothers and sisters, as the book says, let all things be questioned, let all things be revealed. I want you to question, what God did he pray to? What God granted him permission to go and drop such devastating weapons of war on innocent women and children? Now, they dropped these bombs, as they would tell you in history, because the Japanese, a mission called kamikaze, which meant that you would sacrifice yourself in the end. You would not return home. Death would be the end result. And so these Japanese bombers came, and they tore up a place called Pearl Harbor, where a lot of the boats were. And they, even after the end of not having any more bullets, they used their own planes, and they destroyed. Now, the American government was shocked on that morning, because at that time, they were all at the table discussing how they would not come to such a conclusion. And so the American government felt like the Japanese government was sneaky. They came and they bombed us when we were not ready. And when you go into further history, you find out that the Japanese had been planning that for years prior to the actual attack. So that would mean that at the table that they were sitting down to speak peace, they already had a plan for destruction, carrying it out, because they had to come over and undercover it, look up all of the strategic spots that they were hitting. So they had done that. And that's what made the American government so mad. We're going to drop these bombs. And they dropped one bomb on Hiroshima, a town of people, decimated it. The Japanese government surrendered, and they still, after surrender, dropped another bomb on a city called Nagasaki. It was a slap in the face to let them know that was disrespectful what you did, and we're going to smash you. And most people would say that's all right, but I want you brothers and sisters to understand something. When the demon fights the demon, how then can his kingdom stand? They have been fighting each other for generations. They have been destroying each other. That is not your God that they pray to. That is not your way to destroy each other. You combine with an enemy that is as sinister as they have been and have proven to be over all these generations, then you are choosing your own death. Never trust the enemy that brought you over here and shackled your mind and your body, for your father has released you. But we need to know who our father is, who our God and Goddess is, and follow their ways. For us, you have been given pieces of the blueprint. The action starts as soon as you want it to. Get away from their lands, from their ways. Get away from trying to fit in to their world. Get away from trying to get them to understand you. Get away from trying to get them to fix your problem. For their God are not yours. Their ways are not yours. They have been destroying each other, and that is the work of your Father in heaven, who tells you, I will make your enemy your footstool. You won't even have to do it. Stand back and watch my magnificence, for I will forget never what they did to my children, and they will pay for what they sowed, so shall they reap. What have you sown? You've sown a life of looking for your father, sown a life of screaming and crying out for him. And your father is here,
Your father heard you. Your father was there the whole time, never left you. He showed you what you are capable of and showed you what the world is capable of. They will destroy themselves. You will rebuild yourselves. You are his children. And the only on the planet that his spirit resides in. But you have to accept your birthright and jealously know that your birthright is only for you and yours. Do not cast your pearls before swine. Stop trying to join with an enemy that would not treat you right. Oh, they damn sure didn't teach you right. Come out of her is what it means. Come into your understanding, your comedic knowledge. And I want y'all to look that up tonight as y'all prepare for the end of this cycle. And I want y'all to be ready to join us on tomorrow night with a stronger mind than you had tonight. And dig in and give it to those who you love the right food as what was given to you tonight. And so we end as we always begin, hoping that the peace that only God can give, your God, your Father, knows what you need. And if you have your Father, then he will give you the peace that you individually will need to make yours, your family, your line, what it was intended to be. As Ali called it, the greatest. That is us, people. And there's nothing wrong with us accepting it. There are others that's going to try to get us to join in because they know what they did to us, and they know it is now your time to shine. And they want to put the guilt trip on you. Why not everybody? Everybody ain't went through it, and everybody is not my father's children. So everybody will not get it. But we are thankful that our Father jealously loves us. We are thankful that our Father prepared a place for us. And it is the here and now. There's no coast. There's no lines that define us. There are nations. There are titles. But there's no line written or drawn in the sand that is your property and their property. All that you see, all that is on this planet Earth beneath your feet belongs to your Father, and thus it belongs to you. We are not bound by one place and one area, but instead, as we would call Asiatic, all of it is ours, and the reclaiming of it is going on right now. There's a song called We Made It by Jay-Z. You listen to the words. Sit back and enjoy the show, for your father set it up exactly how it is right now. Your victory is guaranteed. And if you try to save any of them, you'll be destroying yourself. Come out of her, my people, and come where you are loved through actions and not just words. And one love.
Black power, Brother Emmanuel, and thank you. One love, like you said. Tune in. Tomorrow, same black time, same black channel.